Let's go down to the Urban Homestead, Pasadena by the freeway. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, Jules and his family are working away. Come on down to the farm in the city, back to the future, back to the plan. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, loving the life back into the land.
Oh, ooh, ooh, help the garden grow.
Singing,
oh, ooh, ooh,
we've got to help the garden grow.
Welcome to the Urban Homestead Radio. We are your hosts, Anise,
Justin,
Jordan.
Special thanks to our sponsor, Lehman's, in Kidron, Ohio. For over 60 years, they have provided practical, non-electrical tools and appliances and home goods. Our family has been a huge fan of theirs since the 1990s and have purchased many quality products for our own homestead. When technology fails, their products will certainly work. So check out their website and online catalog at lehmans.com, and that's lehmans.com. We appreciate the support of this podcast.
Oh, 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 help the garden grow.
Sing it.
Oh, oh, oh,
we've got to help the garden grow.
Oh, 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 help the garden grow.
Sing it. Oh, 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 we've got to help the garden grow.
Hi, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Today we have longtime friend and fellow farmer, Hi, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Today, we have longtime friend and fellow farmer, Sergio Gutierrez of Wayside Farms. Hey, Sergio. Thanks for joining us.
Nice to be here.
Okay. How long have we known you, you think? About, what, 8 years?
We met about the end of 2008.
Okay. So 9 years. And you first came, I think it was to one of our film and food nights.
Is that? I think so.
Yeah, so we were, and what documentary were we showing you?
Talk about Dan brought them.
Yeah. It might have been the future of food.
Was it? The GMO food?
I think it was one of them.
Oh, okay, I can't remember. What was one? So, and then...
it was one of those.
Yeah, I think one of those documentaries.
One of those depressing documentaries.
Those exciting food documentaries.
So, and then how did you hear about our family?
I think... It was one of those television spots. I was hanging out in the kitchen at home, and my dad said, "Hey, come look at this." And there you guys were on TV. I think I told the farm manager at Glen Ivy about that. And then later on, there was, LA Times article, maybe? But then it wasn't until...
It was only 2 years later.
Damn. It was about... No, yeah.
LA Times was 2007, and 2009 would be 2 years later.
So, and that... Was that an ABC spot, maybe?
Nightline?
What year was that?
That was probably a year before. That was before
LA Times. Yeah, so I kind of knew who you guys were, I was working at the farm. But it wasn't until the Freedom Gardens, and I don't know how the hell I got, hooked up to that. But then I found Dan, and then,
Dan brought you here, and then... The rest is history.
Well, Dan told us that Sergio was selling extra tomatoes, and we were having a shortage of tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And I believe one of our volunteers at the time actually drove out to meet Sergio and do a tomato exchange on the side of the road.
She drove over to the flea market.
Did a tomato exchange on the side of the road, bought it back.
My monthly flea market.
And then she goes, "Hey, there's a farmer."
Sighting in L.A.
In L.A. She came back, she goes, "He's a farmer." I was like, "Oh, cool."
Yeah. So
I've been buying from you ever since.
Yeah, so first you were at Glen Ivy, and now Waysides. But so how long have you been, quote, farming or gardening? Or tell us a little bit about how you got into that.
Seriously? Probably since 2006.
Okay.
I mean, I've been gardening. I was gardening before that. Actually, pretty heavy the first couple years before that. And then on and off since I was in my 20s, maybe. I grew a few things when I was a teenager, but...
So remain nameless?
You know. You know, that didn't last very long. And then, you know, little gardens here and there.
So, like, basically, you had a home garden.
Yeah, you know, like, to, you know, go to the nursery, get some plants, tomatoes, yeah. squash, stuff that the family was eating a lot of.
And then you started working at Glen Ivy Farms in Corona. What year is that?
In 2006. I was hired on in July, I think, July 2006.
And how many acres was that? And what was growing
that
there?
That was 20 acres of organic production, which mostly was mostly groves. It was mostly groves, but there was about less than an acre. I mean, it was way less than an acre of potential kitchen garden. Mm-hmm. And then within the first few weeks, I got into that. And I think by the summer, I think by... within a few months, I was actually switched over from the landscaping job that I originally went for. And they said, well, I think you're the gardener now. And you could
you
do landscaping.
Promoted or demoted?
I don't know. I didn't get a raise, that's for sure.
Well, I don't think farmers get any raises.
No. We don't get anything. But when I was hired on, that was, you know, it was for a landscaping job at a retreat center. And, one of the interview questions, because I was interviewed by hippies, which is funny, was, can you grow chard? Oh, no. Was it, can you grow chard and kale? And I was like, I don't think I ever grew it before. But I said, yeah, I could grow that. And that was it. I guess they wanted someone who could grow a lot of chard and kale. Because in the mornings at the farm, they would have green drinks.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
So, a huge thing.
Need someone for the green drinks.
So what would be for... your challenges or your what you learned that you would like to share with us, or any stories or how you learned trial and error, or read a book or took a class?
No, it was all trial and error. I mean, I had a little bit under my belt before I got to the farm, but I remember telling the spiritual leader at the property when I actually got one of my raises, and I think one of the questions he asked was, you know, how I liked, you know, what I liked about that. And I told him, I mean, what I liked about gardening, what I told him was that it was like kind of like a learning garden. Like it was like a blank canvas, and mm-hmm. it wasn't a problem to like screw up. And that's what farmers do, is that you get a friend told me, well, there's always next year. And which is true, but there was you know, there was a lot of seeds, there was plenty of land, and the community that was definitely behind me getting into the garden there, and there was a lot of support. You know, there was support for screwing up.
Yeah.
And but I think I learned quite a bit just by.
That's a natural learning process.
Yeah, and I think that's the way, like any gardener or even like potential farmer, that's
should
probably
be.
Like one of the best ways. I mean, there's plenty of books, or you could take classes, or you could be a master gardener. But the best way is just to get in there and get your hands dirty and just keep on doing it.
Do you think that most people overcomplicate it, or?
I think so.
Yeah, like you just do it.
Just
I mean,
do it, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I tell people. You just do it, yeah. And you probably screw up a few times, but when you get it right, then it, you know, and that's what happened. It was like an epiphany moment. It's like, you know, I think I'm a farmer now. Actually, the farm manager said, you're not a gardener anymore, you're a farmer.
When was that, like, when you first picked some bean?
That was about 2007,
like,
actually.
So what was it?
Just like 1 year?
Just
like a moment, like, you're picking something, or just standing
the
there?
Angels,
and
the angels
and
were singing.
Yeah, it was after hours.
Music swelled.
It was after hours. You know, I was invited just, like, and they probably, like, put a fast one on me, because I wasn't getting paid overtime, but I would just hang out in the garden after hours. And because my job was landscaping, and then when there was extra time, I could go and when I had extra time from the duties that I was originally hired on for, was I could go down in the garden and
you also saved seeds from the farm too, right?
And yeah, I was saving squash first. I think it was squash. Uh-huh. I got in this weird winter squash kick, and
you had a garlic, some funky garlic.
I had different garlics, a couple different garlics. I still have some to this day at the farm I'm at now. Although I forgot which varieties are which, and I have three of them. Three I still have them separated, though. There's three different varieties, and I have no idea what names they are. But
they're separated.
But they're separated, so awesome. There's three different varieties.
And that's a far start.
But isn't there a collard or kale or something that you're growing?
There was a collard green. I think I still have the seeds for that. And
was something unique about it? Or?
Yeah, it was grown in Afghanistan.
But that's what it was.
Okay. And I don't know where I got that from. I think I may have got it in...
Eco Farm
2011.
That's when we went together.
And that's what during its seed. Yeah.
That was the year
2011.
So
that's the year we went together.
I think it was.
That was your first time to Eco Farm, right?
Yeah.
With us. Yeah.
I think
Eco Farm
time.
Is a conference up in
Asilomar,
for farmers, and they have this amazing seed swap that is actually almost like a free for all.
I know, it's pretty good.
It's like elbows and chest bumping.
There's all kinds of seeds. It's
yeah,
really
people.
Cool.
Well, it's about 5 days, and you go in there
and the seed swap is like...
Full contact seed swap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like grabbing everything.
Yeah, this year I went with one of my colleagues, or a few of them, from the farm now, and we actually got to sit with David Massmutter.
Oh, yeah.
And his family. So we met his daughter and his wife, and one of the first things he asked was, like, hey, what's it like working at the jail? It's like, it was pretty funny.
So tell our listeners. So your first year at Glen Ivy, and we had when we could pass through there, we would always visit. It was very beautiful. It had its own water
source.
Gorgeous
certified
trees.
Certified organic.
Yeah,
certified organic. Gorgeous avocados. Was
vast variety. Mm-hmm. Avocados, citrus, and the Shambar grapefruit mm-hmm. was sort of a...
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And you had nuts and all sorts of rice. So now...
Glen Ivy Farm went up for sale, and it was sold to people who do not care to upkeep
it. So now, tell us more about what your farm now, Wayside Farm.
Wayside Farm. So I work for a Five Key Schools, which is contracted with the Sheriff's Department within... I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, but I work within Pitch's Detention Center up in Castaic, California. And I'm one of a few farm instructors, so teaching inmates. I hired on for greenhouse and community garden.
Seed starting, right?
You
start the seeds and just stuff?
Yeah, there's a greenhouse, there's a hothouse. I guess I turned it into a hothouse. It's pretty hot. it kind of works. But yeah, it's mainly for support. Well, it's support for the instructor that teaches row crops. So there's larger fields there where there's a lot of growing going on. And so I teach the guys how to start the seeds, transplanting, hardening off, and then eventually they end up in a larger field. We have a small garden that we keep, and we'll put a lot of vegetables in there.
Is it rewarding, since you've been doing it so long, is it rewarding to see people that haven't gardened, their interest or their, like, what do you call that?
Fascination or
educating
them,
learning something
exactly
new, or is it they just going through the motions? I mean, have epiphany on their thing?
I see that sometimes, and I think it's anyone that would actually grow a seed and see it come up for the first time. I see that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. It's the same, I mean, I never get over it. Like, yeah, it came up.
That's half the battle.
A lot of these men are from L.A., a lot of, drug addicts, gang members, people have no interest in doing anything else, and they're put in the class with me, and I got to convince them that, yeah, you're in a class now, and there's going to be some hard work. There's a lot of... the guys are kind of indifferent, I guess. Mm-hmm. But after a while, they get behind it. And I think what happens is I create a routine. So, you pick them up in the morning, they put their shoes on, and then we either go to the garden or go to the greenhouse to water. Maybe there's something to plant. Mm-hmm. But there's always a routine. It's it always starts with putting their boots on. And they get to have a little bit of coffee or whatever they're giving them, chicory. I have no idea. It's hot.
Yeah.
And take them through different areas that I've created. So there's a community garden space, or like a model for a community garden. So like raised beds.
Uh-huh.
And we do a lot of gardening in there. or we have to water the plants in the greenhouse or keep stuff alive in the hothouse. There's an orchard that planted about 130 stone fruit trees, maybe. Some of them have died, but since last year I've put in about 3 or 4 acre orchard. Mm-hmm. And then turn the irrigation on. We walk the irrigation like we used to do at the farm.
Special thanks to our sponsor, Food Alchemy, whose Papua coffee is the only coffee we drink here on the Urban Homestead. We also offer their coffee to our Farm Box customers. The essential oils unique to Papua coffee promotes pH balance and detoxification. Organically grown in a pristine tropical rainforest, Food Alchemy's Papua coffee is Rainforest Alliance certified. Order your next cup at livingbeyondorganic.com.
So what are you growing now? Strawberries?
Well, we actually took all the strawberries out.
It's too hot.
Yeah, we planted them last year in March. We got a harvest this year in March, and then they took a dump.
Yeah, they're very hard to grow.
Yeah, it's really hot up there, and if depending on who I get in the class, if they're not watering right, they'll wet the plants too much, and I'm always on top of them. Hey, you can't wet the plants, it's too hot, it's going to be 100, and doesn't necessarily always work. We have a lot of tomatoes that were... this year isn't like the greatest year. Last year was fantastic, and actually the winter was really good for greens.
Yeah, we finally, after 6 years of drought, and we had rain this winter, you thought maybe we'd had a better year, but some of the things are little.
There were two, and also the tree, the water, the rain wasn't enough to save some of the trees.
Yeah, the garlic, that garlic that I mentioned earlier, it all burst out of the skins, mm-hmm. and I harvested it in May, which I'm used to harvesting in late June or July, but I'm in a different microclimate than I was for the last 9 years, and I think what it is that garlic was probably... It probably got too much water because of the rain, mm-hmm. and it was acclimated to like Glen Ivy's.
Riverside County dry. Yeah, so you're at Glen Ivy for 9 years, about 1 year now,
about 18 months now. Yeah.
And you planted for what you said blueberries too, right?
Yeah, they came early in November. We planted them in the ground in November, but mm-hmm. when they finally came in about March, maybe about April. Mm-hmm. We must have got them for about 2 months, which was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And I've never grown them before. Mm-hmm. The plants aren't very big, but it was kind of neat. Every few days you go out there, there's a handful of blueberries.
They're fighting the birds and stuff.
Yeah, the birds.
Rabbits.
And then when the inmates, when we would park over, the first thing they do is run over to and see if you can get some blueberries.
Because we're friends, you told us about how they are really appreciating eating in the garden.
Yeah, the fresh fruit is a big thing because they don't get fresh fruit at all. Mm-hmm. So they have names for like their dinner. One of them's called, there's a few names I can't even mention. Inappropriate.
Some that you can mention.
But the chicken will...
But the one that they mention a lot is called gray matter. And they talk about gray matter quite a bit. Or one of them will say it actually tasted good. Mm-hmm.
What is it?
I have no idea. I think they say it might be like a pasta and a meat concoction. Mm-hmm. It probably looks like a piece of casserole.
Sounds good.
Like a blot. Mm-hmm. They get to eat fresh vegetables. I have to make sure that they're not like completely grazing on everything, mm-hmm. because they'll eat everything up. Mm-hmm. If there has to be enough for everybody. So if I have, whether it's like 2 or 8 guys, mm-hmm. and one of them will ask if they can have some, but there has to be enough for everyone.
Yeah. So, I mean, you described one time, and people might not know this, what do the prisoners actually typically eat? You were describing it.
Well, lunches are from... sandwiches, and it's a very simple sandwich. 2 pieces of bread.
White bread.
White bread. And there's a lot of problems associated with white bread, wheat, and
et cetera. No nutritional value.
Yeah. There's bologna, and whether it's... bologna's not real.
American cheese slices.
There's no there's no cheese. There might be a little package of mayonnaise. Mm. Baby carrots, which are actually giant carrots, just like gone shaped through
down.
A machine.
Sandpaper
down. Yeah.
Sandpaper down. What's that called? Like a... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whittled.
Yeah. And a bag of chips, or like a bag of Lay's or Fritos, and a juice box.
Yeah, so to them, so, this is like, you know,
eye-opening, like, tasty.
I know, tasty. Yeah. You're giving them good tasting food, so they probably...
Yeah, and that's Monday through Friday. Friday, it's instead of bologna, it's peanut butter. But everything else is the same. So juice boxes, which are basically sugar, although it has no sugar added, but, you know, there's a way around that.
It's called high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah. or natural flavors, which I think is another way of processing corn. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the challenges you faced, I know when Glen Ivy, you had a...
Oh, yes, we heard it.
Your stories about the ground squirrels or gophers were
yes, we'll have to keep this G-rated, so...
Well...
and all kinds of people listen to it.
Well, like many farmers, you have to deal with the pest, and there are a lot of different ways you could do it, and not very kind ways you could deal with it, and some farmers will create sport out of it. I won't get into any detail, but I actually... did some of that, but not the sport, but you know, trapping and but a chicken wire fence, which was probably the best thing you could do, was a 3-foot chicken wire fence. Unfortunately, when I started the garden, there wasn't a cactus garden next to it, and someone had a great idea to put large boulders, and I actually had a lot to do with that. That was one of the first projects that I did, was to put in...
So the somebody was you.
So you created a habitat.
Yeah. Yeah, first they had to create a squirrel habitat. Yeah, let's go back. I think I did that. But I didn't...
Now you tell me. You kept saying the somebody. Like
I didn't...
your alter ego.
I didn't put the giant boulders. What it was two gigantic boulders in the raised bed with a lot of succulents.
It was like a hotel.
Yeah, and they would go in that out, left... Yeah, it was just... you know, mass amount of squirrels. But that was a big learning experience, too, is learning that anything... You know, I learned a lot about how squirrels work just by that.
Mm-hmm. They don't like... Any tips you share?
They don't like to be out in the open. You probably don't want to have, like, a cactus garden next to your garden, your vegetable garden, or... where you're doing row crops. You don't want to have large boulders sunk into the ground because the squirrels are going underneath. Squirrels don't like to be out in the open. You won't ever see them just like cruising down a road and hoping to find row crops to eat. They go from... There's a lot of aloe plants up against the garden fence, so they would go from the rocks to aloe, and they were hiding. They want to hide out. And they would try to dig underneath the fence. They could actually climb the fence, but they won't do it.
It's too exposed.
It's too exposed. There's a lot of hawks out there. Even now, there's a lot of hawks where I'm farming. But they'll find little openings. So, you know, the fence was never perfect. But they definitely don't like to be out in the open. Yeah. So if you have like a, you know, like a, what do you call that? A buffer zone.
Yeah.
Between your garden and nature, that could help out quite a bit.
Yeah. And also, we have a share of pests is the grotta bugs, which could demolish, decimate
vampire bugs.
Vampire bugs.
A garden overnight.
They also called love bugs?
Yeah, I think they only showed up in 2008 here.
Well, I think later than that.
Well, okay, no, they started. Were you the one that wanted a flamethrower?
Vacuum cleaner.
Well, anyway.
Flamethrower, vacuum cleaner for the grotta bugs.
Wait, I think I did the vacuum cleaner once. And it got a lot of dirt. And I think I tried neem originally, but it would dope them out, because 15 minutes later they would just wake up and start walking around again.
It just made them high.
Okay. Yeah, I think it wasn't strong enough. I think it was like, I think I was using diluted neem by that time. And that didn't work. What did work was, because they would climb on peppers and tomatoes, because that's the main crop that I was doing a lot of. I got crazy on tomatoes. And they would get all over tomatoes and bell peppers. So I would get like a little paper cup, and then just tap the vegetable, and then they would just fall in there. if I had a water hose out and it was hot, I would just turn it on and squirt a little bit of warm water, and that actually killed them. But the last thing you want to do is start pouring warm water all over your vegetable plants. Mm-hmm. But that was the only thing that could kill them back then, was hot water.
Mm-hmm. And this is your certified
organic. Your fingers are...
Yes, and
limited to what we can't... We don't use anything either.
But you were certified, so you were a little restricted on...
Yeah, and we didn't even try buying anything. I think someone gave me the name, mm-hmm. but it was...
They said nothing can kill it, really.
Yeah, it's pretty strong stuff. We've tried a broad range of organic pest control, and there was, so far we haven't found anything that worked.
I found something. I use a concoction of neem and liquid ladybug, but I'm not sure
what
the liquid ladybug was. There, it was in a container of supplies of I guess it was
In the shed, stuck in the shed somewhere.
No, liquid ladybug. Well, there's hydroponic supplies that the sheriff's department would get. Seeds from illegal growing houses.
Growing houses.
Illegally grown tomato plants. and I'm not sure what the liquid ladybug is. And I want to say it was organic and natural, but we had ladybug. It was a cute picture. But a concoction of the neem and that, and we sprayed it on those bugs. But this year was really bad. Mm. I mean, it was horrible.
It's interesting because this year wasn't bad for us, actually, considering.
I mean,
Well, summer's almost over.
Let's not jinx it yet.
Yeah, so
we had a relatively mild Bagrata
thing,
but I think something had to do with the turnover, mm-hmm. something had to do with the weather, and it might have been the fallow with the bed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It might have.
It did
might
fallow.
Have
yeah.
Thing, and then also we just stopped growing the stuff that they love. So we are limited by what we grow because we know what they like. So we said, well, we don't grow that. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, or unfortunately, we were able to control them by not growing things. We couldn't control them, so we just not grew them.
We had them underneath the blueberry bushes.
Yeah.
And they would get on the blueberry bushes. We would tap the plant, it would fall to the ground, and we would spray them. Anything that was green, any weeds, they definitely don't like the heat. So if there were any weeds that we didn't take care of in the middle of the rows, we would go over, pull the weed out, and there'd be like a mass amount of bugs underneath, and we'd spray it. But we didn't start spraying until after we ate all the blueberries.
Yeah.
So blueberry season was over. It kind of came in towards
the
end of the blueberries.
Did you ever try flamethrower? You ever tried blowtorch or flamethrower?
No.
Or is that just a fantasy?
Mm-hmm. No, it's, hopefully.
Because you would roast the vegetables.
Well, you can roast the weeds if they're there. Just zap them.
I don't think the sheriffs would like me with the flamethrower with a bunch of inmates.
Yeah.
They have a squirrelinator up there, and that's always been a great fantasy of mine.
A squirrelinator.
And folks, you can look that one up. There's plenty of YouTube videos that are rather exciting.
Yeah.
But there is one on the property, but I wasn't able. I think one of the yeah, they're like the enemy. I mean, they're kind of and they're kind of cute.
Do you have a social life? No.
We'll get into that. The hobbies later. So what's the hardest thing you've ever grown?
The hardest thing?
Like, wow, this is challenging. I'm not gonna do this again. Challenging. Like, oh boy.
Maybe bell peppers are hard. I have a hard time with bell peppers. Mm-hmm. Starting from seed and then actually getting them. I do have peppers are one of the hardest things to start.
They take forever.
They take forever, and even when you got nice plants, it takes a long time for them to get to that point where they want to start flowering.
Yeah. Once you start like in January to even get them.
That's what I've done. So at Glen Ivy, there was a hothouse I used cold frames. And I would start them in there. It was always perfect because it was field mice. Now I'm working at greenhouses. Then I think this year we started Anaheims and lunchbox peppers in January. I still don't have them. They're still growing.
Because, yeah. January you don't think of growing peppers.
Yeah.
Then by the time you remember, it's like, wow,
it's too late.
Too late. Let's buy some starts. But January is probably, you have to do that for peppers.
What's your favorite thing that you like to grow? Like, I want to grow this, and
what do you look forward to?
You look forward to, like,
I think you like trees.
garlic.
Besides, and tomatoes, I know you're tomatoes.
I like tomatoes. When I was at Glen
Ivy. What's your favorite tomato?
Berries and trees.
It's actually a hybrid. It's I like Sun Gold.
Yeah.
Sun Gold is just really sweet. You know, people have a thing against hybrids, but there are really nice hybrids you could grow, and you can grow them organically. And they're not GMOs. Mm-hmm. People get that mixed up. Mm-hmm. I mean, heirlooms, to a certain extent, are kind of...
picky.
Well, you know, I guess there's... I don't say that they're hybrids in a way, but I guess...
I mean, they're cross-pollinated, yeah. So somewhat. Yeah, I think you recommended one time Dr.
Weiches. Those are really nice, too. Once you start getting a harvest, it takes about a month before it actually sweet. I don't know if you guys noticed that, too. The difference
in tomatoes?
In the tomato. Yeah, after maybe about a month of growth, and then you start eating them after. Well, I mean, eating the whole time, but they become sweeter.
Wow.
So when I was saving seeds, I'd actually wait for about a month or two in its production to actually start saving the seeds.
Because
I think the flavor was a lot better. Mm. And, you know, after a while, I was, you know, growing for my own seed and noticing a difference in the taste.
And it's pretty easy to save your tomato seeds. People just don't realize that.
Yeah. And that was fun because it was just easy. I mean, tomatoes are really easy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. Cabbages have been kind of hard.
Brussels sprouts?
Brussels sprouts are a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. We don't really live in the climate.
Yeah, that's not conducive.
You know, we're, you know,
we're too arid. Too hot.
Too early.
We're probably too close to the desert, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or it was a desert.
Before irrigation.
Yeah. What I miss is, I miss getting from you is the all the fruit that Glen Ivy would have. So, I would jam a lot. You know, you'd bring in the apricots and figs and...
Persimmons.
Peaches.
And the plums.
Apricots, peaches. Nectarines. We had some nectarines.
So, I mean, we had
all the oranges.
Citrus. Like,
yeah.
We had some great oranges.
I mean, we have fruit trees, but, you know, for jamming, you need a lot. And so we would years, that was...
Blood oranges, yeah.
People asked me...
Pomegranates.
What? It was about 2 years ago when after Glen Ivy sold...
had an issue before that because of the drought.
Oh, the drought, yeah.
We weren't getting...
So people were asking me, where's your jam? I'm like, well, it's a drought. I don't have any fruit, so...
And also, some of the farms went out of business or sold out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you realize, you notice people getting out of it, or it's too hard.
Yeah. I mean, we had there were issues with the well in the summertime because there was a retreat or hot springs next to it, and there was always an issue with who was using more water. Was it the people swimming in the water or the farmers trying to water the crops? And the creek, there's a creek that runs, and you know, throughout the year, out of the mountains, and that took care of the garden. I mean, everything I grew in the garden was actually off creek water. The navel oranges, those are all on creek water. Everything else is on well. I used to just drink that water; it was great.
Water is valuable.
And heritage breeds or heritage variety of
like Shambar
donut peaches, and then Shambar grapefruit.
We didn't have the donut peaches.
No, you didn't. It wasn't.
Where's it gone from someone?
The white ones.
You brought us something.
Did I?
Yeah, you brought us some.
I also gone from somebody else.
And you also had the white peaches.
We had Babcock peaches.
Oh, maybe that was it. Yeah.
But I don't remember.
Well, you introduced
unless
us.
Unless there was.
Might have been
donut peaches the first year.
I think it was.
Because when I expanded the garden, we took out a bunch of apple trees that were like really old, and they had actually been transplanted and into an area that me and the farm manager talked about. It's like, well, we could either try and grow some apples, or we could actually turn this over, and within months we could actually grow a lot of vegetables. And within months, I had like one of my first crops of lettuce, which was a really nice crop. This was before I met you all.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really nice. The lettuce is really good. The soil was great.
Our customers would tell us, you know, the best orange they've ever had, the best, you know, your stuff was the best ever tasted.
Those are some of the best oranges I've ever had.
Yeah,
my grandma has a tree in Orange County, which is great. Mm-hmm. And these are probably second. I'm biased. Yeah. But yeah, they are really good oranges.
And you almost had year-round avocados, right?
Yeah, there was about seven varieties of avocados. I think maybe at some point in
between
December and January, there really wasn't anything.
So what was the seven varieties?
Jeez, I don't remember. It was Stewart's, Pinkerton's,
Fuertes,
it was Haas, it was Reed.
Zentano, or is it
Zentano?
Yeah.
There's six. One more.
There's one more. I don't know what it is. Did I say Stewart's?
Mexicola? Did you do it?
Yeah, we had Stewart's.
Stewart's. Or
is that? Maybe. I don't remember.
Okay. Well, we got the
close. Well, that's six of them at least.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Almost year round.
Yeah. And they all had...
Certified organic?
Certified organic. They were certified organic in 1992. It was probably one of the earliest farms out of this. Maybe in the Inland Empire that was... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very sad to see. It was a sad day when we found out they're still
harvesting the fruit. They're still taking care of it from the last person I spoke with works there. But I'm not sure if the certification was dropped. Mm. And
so you want to use Roundup or something after you?
I have no idea what's going on over there. They wouldn't. I tried getting in, but they wouldn't let me in.
So
I wanted to visit, but. They were having it.
All right. You also have some interest in pets. You have
ducks.
Ducks.
Yeah.
Cats. Kitties.
Kitties.
Ducks. Cats. I used to have a dog.
Yeah. But yeah, Muscovies.
Muscovy ducks. Mm-hmm. Cindy and Sandy.
Cindy and Sandy.
They've been alive for as long as I remember.
Well, we've known you.
I've known you.
Yep.
Still going.
When I visit, they live with my folks, and when I visit them, they'll come up to the gate. They remember me.
Aww. That's sweet.
You're sweet.
Well, maybe.
You also have a soft spot for kittens.
Yes, I have. I have the old farm cat, or
Mean cat.
It never really made it as a farm cat.
What's its name?
Cat.
It is not
original.
Cat.
Original name?
Purslane.
I like Purslane. That's so cute.
She's cute.
When I was in the garden, one of the community members was, she actually came from an Amish community. I think her name was Suzanne. I think she's farming in Costa Rica right now. But we were pulling Purslane out of the beds because it just grows like a weed. And she said, well, maybe you should name the cat Purslane. Because we're surrounded by Purslane and the cat was underneath my leg. So I was
That's cute.
It is cute.
All right, but
she's a pretty cute cat.
I feel kind of silly calling
Purslane.
So he calls a cat.
Where are you at?
Hey, cat.
All right. I wouldn't call a cat. I just said, where are you at? Hey.
Hey.
Where are you at?
She follows you around like a dog.
Kind of, yeah. You know. She knows when I get mad.
Yeah.
When she gets out.
Crazy cat man.
Crazy cat man. And so, yeah, you met a lot of people. You have, I remember being on the phone with you and you tell me the volunteers and
horror stories
or good stories, but there was one with this chair.
The chair. Yeah, well, if that gal's listening, I won't mention her name, but if she's listening, she could know what happened. But yeah, there was, there's more to the story, but probably shouldn't say anything. But I had a young woman that was working in the garden with me, and you know, we're good friends, but after a while it kind of wore, and but she found this little Tyco chair. I think it was Tyco, it was a little plastic chair, and
Kitty
she
chair.
Would sit on it, and there was a lot to weed, and I was moving, you know, by that time I was really moving, and you know, she had little, she wanted to sit on a chair. I guess it's a good thing now. I guess it, maybe now that I look back, it's like maybe that was
you're older and wiser.
Maybe that was such a bad idea. My back's all screwed up.
But what did your dad say?
Huh?
Your dad had a saying.
Your dad had a saying you would tell us. You're on?
If you're sitting in your house, you ain't doing anything. Or something to that effect. I mean, really, if you are.
We are sitting, folks.
I mean, that's just, you know, when I'm with the guys at work, if they're sitting down, then I know they're not doing anything. If there's anyone that should be sitting down, it'll be me.
Because you're getting older.
You're getting older, and we.
I think now our conversation's like, oh, that hurts. Oh, my back. Oh, I'm tired.
Speaking. Well, farmers work hard too. Yeah.
I know.
Well, you also have other interests besides farming. Tell us about your
hobbies.
Your
hobbies?
Minor collection of records.
I have
no very little interest in records.
Oh, yeah.
And your very small collection.
I'm a small collection of pre-war jazz and blues records. It's rather small.
How many records do you collect, or do you have now?
I don't know. I stopped counting.
Yeah. Storage unit full, and a
Yeah, I got a couple lot bedrooms of records.
And tintypes.
What's your favorite record? Or what's your...
That's kind of, I don't know. I mean, there's all kinds of music that... I collect music from the pre-1940s. So a lot of recordings on shellac, jazz. Mainly, I've been in the jazz since I was like 14, 15 years old.
And you kept, and you collect...
I have a couple of Victrolas or wind-up photographs. I probably buy... I've had more, but I flip them too, so I'll get rid of them.
What got you interested in that? Just the music or just...
The music. I mean, just... like I said, when I was a kid, I got into jazz and reading about like Louis Armstrong or Charlie Parker, who were they into?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it started off with like... I was really into the Grateful Dead when I was 16, 17, 18. I mean, I still like them. But when I really got into them, I was kind of curious... about the songs and on the records that would say traditional. And they were covering a lot of traditional songs, a lot of traditional American songs, and reading about them and who the members of that band were actually interested in. So a lot of jazz, a lot of Jimmy Rogers, Carter Family. I heard the word 78 RPM and I started reading more about... I started reading a lot about music. I love to read. I was always reading about... I was always into, like... You know... I think it was until after high school I actually got into reading the literature that I was supposed to read in high school. Mm-hmm. So anything. I mean, the notes on the back of a shampoo bottle wherever I was or where I was sitting.
Yeah.
You know, when anything I could read. But finding out about... the influences of like the musicians that I was really into. What was Jerry Garcia into? You know, Carter Family, John Coltrane, Charlie Parker, all these different names. And I knew who Charlie Parker was and Louis Armstrong, but even reading about Charlie Parker, who was he into? And there'd be different names, and just kind of like going way back. I think the pre-war music I really got into started off from little cassette tapes. From the music store, there was a company called Diazu that would do compilations of blues artists, and Charlie Patton, Henry Thomas, all kinds. There's so many names, but reading about record collectors who would go door to door in the South and looking for old records, and it wasn't until years and years later that I think it was until I actually got a car where I said, I could probably go find some old records too, and I just started driving. I put a lot of mileage on my vehicles just to go look for old records.
And you've been known to actually play these in the farm.
Yeah.
You drag out this little wind up little...
Well, no, at the farm actually, there was a chicken coop in the middle of the garden, and I stuck a stereo and speakers, and we didn't have any chickens, so that wasn't a problem, and that was my storage, so I would just play music. And it was never a problem. The people at the community actually appreciated walking down the little trail to the spa next door. They would hear either jazz or folk music or blues or... I like rock and roll. I like it all.
Mm-hmm.
But music's a big part of my life.
Yeah, what's your most prized record in your collection?
Or what's in the past, what you've collected or...
Just I have some pretty rare blues records. Mm-hmm. I have, I have a couple blues records that maybe only a few other people have, mm-hmm. or at least that collectors know about.
Mm-hmm.
Collectors get pretty nerdy, and they kind of count who's got this record, who's got that. And I got pretty rare blues records that some of the more advanced collectors I know would like love to have.
Mm-hmm.
But jazz. I mean, I don't know. It's all over the place.
Yeah. I know. You've told me you had, like, records from recordings from, like, folk, like, Indian to...
Oh, I got... Indian music, mm-hmm. Arabic, Persian music.
Yeah,
it's all over the map.
Mm-hmm.
Hungarian music. I think the majority of what I have is either jazz and dance recordings from the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. That's what I really like to find. It was marketed in the West Coast, but like country music from 20s and 30s blues from the 20s and 30s wasn't really, there wasn't a market out here.
Yeah. Yeah. We also knew local musicians that introduced to us, and we had their concerts, Frank Fairfield and Meredith Axelrod. Meredith Axelrod had been here several, that sold out, Blind Boy. Blind Boy Paxton, they played here for a couple.
And they were on Robert Redford's documentary on PBS just recently. So.
Yeah, and they collect as well.
So but there was interest, you brought them here to the farm, they posted almost every show was sold out by Frank, you know, so we'll have to get them back and get them on the show one day.
Yeah, get them on the show. Yeah, I don't know. I just, I think for some, I mean, me personally, I think farming and music go hand in hand because that's just back to, you know, what people did. They farmed and then they had music.
Yeah, and I thought blending it together at work was actually really cool. I play a lot of music for the guys at work. So I subject them to
torture.
A lot of my music. There's a stereo in the greenhouse, although I let them listen to whatever they want. And I had to fight for that. Some of the other instructors, the brass didn't mind so much because there's a lot of music around the workshops, but making the case over, like I think my boss had a problem with it at one point, that they're listening to hip-hop music and that there's, like, it's not part of the culture, and I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, music's, it doesn't matter what you're listening to as long as you're enjoying what you're doing. I mean, it makes work more enjoyable. And, you know, farming is fun, but at the same time, it is a lot of work.
Music gets me through a lot of canning.
Yeah, and one of the first things the guys will do is, and whoever it is, there's one guy that really likes country music, and I'm not a big fan of like modern country music, but I think I appreciate it more. There is actually really good stuff. I mean, most of it's like bubblegum and really horrible. If you play country music, I hope you're playing good country music. But I hear a lot of hip hop all the time, and I think a lot of that's kind of grown on me. I mean, I'm not going out and buying, you know, country records, or at least modern. I like old country. I like Hank Williams and that old stuff when it sounded like country.
And it's also real and genuine without the synthesizers and the mixers and the
or auto-tune. I think auto-tune is just like used and really, it's just horrible.
But, I mean, and when Sojo plays his records, it's like
and everyone in country kind of sounds the same. It's like they took a class. I know that there's got to be a Saturday Night Live skit about like taking the class to sing country.
Yeah, they use the same flow chart, you know, of how to write a song.
Yeah, I mean, there is good country out there, and I just haven't found, you know, been exposed to a lot of it.
We like the Seeker sisters were really still country. They're not country, but we saw them. No, but they were the old, like Patsy Cline sort of.
You have to look in their story, which kind of came out recently, which is really interesting. Yeah. So when they came out, it was sort of like they weren't doing what they wanted to do. It's interesting. It's interesting to read, but they're doing good stuff.
Like you're talking about music change, has farming changed or changed in the past 10 years you've been doing it?
What do you think about like this whole?
There's future. There's
is
hope for mankind.
Is it something you're gonna do for the rest of your life?
I hope so. I mean, it's.
What's your plans?
What's my plan? I don't know.
Sorry.
I hope to stay where I'm at now because it's really interesting and I'm learning a lot. Teaching is something I've never really done before. I'd like to keep it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how long I'll be here, but I think it's a good place to be. You know, working with these guys who never. I mean, I don't know, I think society's kind of given up on a lot of these men and maybe giving them, like, a different opportunity to do something.
I think you mentioned some guy wants to go home and start a market garden.
A lot of the guys talk about a lot of the guys will say is, I'm not going to be a farmer, but I definitely want to grow something when I get home.
Yeah, I think you talked.
And that's awesome.
You've talked about the one thing about farming, and it's just a social issue at large, is you teach someone how to farm, and the cost of land in California is so insane anyway. So, like, when you send someone out after learning the farm, what could they do? Is it really like farming job? Like, yeah, you know, they're really like,
there's no culture, farming culture.
If you teach them how to be an engineer, maybe they
Well, you have to create, you kind of create your own culture, like you guys have. Mm-hmm. You have a small community, which is you and the people that we know.
And you and us.
Yeah, it's, makes two of us. You have to go find it. When I was at Glen Ivy, and when I really got into it, when I think I had that epiphany moment, especially when I started sales, because I did take over sales for a while, I started contacting, and I was wondering, I mean, I found you guys, but I wanted to know who else was out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the internet, Local Harvest was a good resource. Mm-hmm. I met a lot of farmers through Local Harvest, and they're friends to this day. I saw, you know, Gabriel from Unity Farm. Mm-hmm. I met him through, I think, Local Harvest.
And then you introduced him to us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was, and it's, you're not going to drop in. I mean, you can, maybe if you head east or maybe head north, but if you're in LA, you certainly have to create your own community.
And the land is expensive.
Yeah, but I mean, you can still, I mean, you guys are doing it in the backyard. Yeah. And what I tell the guys.
You started in your backyard.
And I started in my backyard, and I had a girlfriend, and we gardened quite a bit. I mean, I learned a lot in that backyard. Actually, a lot. And just trial and error. I mean, mm-hmm. I gardened with someone who got passionate about it by just doing trial and error, having the backyard space. I think that's where the future can be, at least for anyone that wants to get into it.
A lot of people do have
backyards,
access to their backyard,
or
their parents'
family.
Backyard, or their neighbor's backyard. You know, a lot of people live in apartments.
Or empty lots. I know there's got to be programs out there that are allowing residents to take over empty lots. Mm-hmm. You know, community gardens are a resource in a lot of cities. I mean, they're popping up more and more, I think. And I tried a community garden space in Corona where I was living.
I remember that.
and that was to plant my garlic. And I think what it was I wanted to grow something away from like where I was living, because it just got me out of the house more. Mm-hmm. Then to realize, you know, what am I doing? I should just grow in the backyard. Mm-hmm. And I was growing in the backyard, but I needed a space for the garlic.
I think what backyards are the most underutilized, you know, space in America.
I mean, you tear out that grass and grow some, or tear up half of it, and you could do quite a bit. You know, originally when people came out to the West Coast, they were growing their own food. Mm-hmm. I've seen, what was it, newspaper clippings from an LA newspaper from about 1910, and there were the ads for homes along the coast. I think like Long Beach, Orange County. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if it was Orange County back then. But it was L.A. Area, and every single ad said nice, dark soil, good for growing. Every single ad. And I'd like to get that from my friend has that. I haven't talked to her in a while, but that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen, was nice, good soil for growing, because they knew back then that if they were going to lure people out here, that they were going to grow their food. Remember, supermarkets didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. It was California.
We have a somewhat year-round growing season.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple of cold months of cold California.
Yeah, you can grow just about anything. Mm-hmm. Where we are, it's harder to grow certain, you know, cold crops.
Yeah.
But you can do that if you plant at the right time, or if you go to the nursery and grab the plants and put them in the ground at the right time, you can get your cabbage. You can get broccoli.
I think many of the cities were either named after farms. So Orange Grove, Orange County, I think, was full of orange.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people went out there.
Luther Burbank, I think, was based out of Burbank. He bred varieties, grapefruit, all those stuff.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and if you looked at the, I think you, were you the one posting, you would post the packing slips on the side and have these beautiful...
The wooden crates?
The wooden crates, and then be gorgeous of like
I have
orange groves
like the
and...
Fruit crate labels.
Yes.
I mean, I know that there was an industry... In the teens, 20s, and 30s, the citrus industry was huge, but I think also a lot of other stuff was growing, a lot of vegetables.
There was a citrus that originated, I don't know if it was the navels. I know some of the...
Savannah?
No, there's it's in Upper Riverside. I think they have it. There's that tree.
Yeah,
they have
I think off of, I want to say off of Harupo and Magnolia, the mother tree. The mother Washington orange. I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But there is I know it's on Magnolia. Mm-hmm. I want to say the other corner is Harupa, but on that there's
it's like a landmark.
Yeah, basically,
they trace back to.
But I think that's the mother tree where they actually got the clippings.
Yeah, that's right. I remember
still
that.
Alive, and I think there's an avocado. It's was either Fuertes or something. It was this accidental seed, like a seed sprout. And then there's another one.
I know that the what we had at Glen Ivy was Chambar.
Mm-hmm. Chambar,
and that was. I want to say that was discovered in the early 40s. I think a farmer was going down to the grove and noticed a pink blush on his white
grapefruit.
And I think what happened was I think the University of Riverside came out, and I think over so many years they developed it, and it was originally planted, I think, in Corona. That's what we had at the farm was a Chambar. That was actually really good.
That was best.
I didn't get into grapefruit until I got into that. And it took a few years when I was at Glen Eye. I was like, grapefruit, what? And then...
That's a very rare, mm-hmm. very tasty, very sweet mm-hmm. yeah. grapefruit.
I mean, I think there's a farmer down in Impala. There are some of that growing around, but I don't think it's.
I remember juicing it and just drinking it straight.
I think you brought a gallon.
I think one of the first times I came over with a giant pickle jar full of it.
Yeah, it was like, that's been great.
And people were like, oh,
I think
what
Justin
is this?
Kept drinking hell out of it.
What is this stuff?
It says grapefruit juice.
You're like, what?
Yeah.
Who drinks grapefruit juice? Yeah. It was really sweet.
Straight. No sugar.
Oh, no. That stuff... I mean, grapefruit's actually really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
People get...
The rinds.
It's the rinds. I think
membrane.
People bite into a grapefruit.
And the membrane gets...
And then they get that taste, and mm-hmm. then it just... It's like... it ruins it. Sort of like persimmons. Like I grew up thinking persimmons were bitter because of what people told me.
But the American versus the... Asian ones, right? What's the one called? American persimmons. Uh-huh. What's the one?
There's the Hai
Chia. Those are a little rough to eat. But the Fuyu ones are dynamite. So.
Yeah.
Fuyu ones were.
So, those, I know. They're
we can talk about farming forever.
I know, we can talk about farming.
It happens all the time with Sojo.
We're sort of getting a...
Farming's nonstop.
I know. We can have you back.
Part two.
So,
there's a friend. We'll drag him back.
I know, we'll friend. So, I know, like I said, you're growing hope for the future. We're growing hope for the future. Do you have hope for the future for the farming? I mean, you're seeing, like I said, there's been
changes.
Waves and changes and trends and fads.
Well,
and
I don't pay attention to a lot of what's. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I should.
Going on, no. Yes,
but a lot of the fads or what people are doing, I'm more concerned about what I could do in my. Community, which my community now is like incarcerated men, and maybe next time we'll talk more about that because we really did it. But trying to get these guys interested in something, or the people I know, my family. There's a garden now at home that I don't have to keep. Now there's a garden which it took many years for that to go in, but every time I visit, there's like fantastic tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And my tomatoes are crap this year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the peppers are really good over there. The trellising was really interesting. It was all made out of 2x4s or wood stakes, and it's like, wow, how come I didn't think about that? Mm-hmm. But I'm more concerned about what we can do here.
Like I said, for you and us, where it's almost it's not second nature, but you grew up. It's a part of our life. Mm-hmm. For people that aren't.
Thing.
Familiar with it, to be exposed to that way of life, it's like they're like a child seeing something for the first time.
Yeah.
It's when people ask this stuff, it's like, oh, I'm not saying dismissive, but sometimes it takes an outside
wonderment
from kids. We have the after school program,
or the inner city
somebody came to me and said, this is a carrot flower. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, carrots bloom. I'm like, yeah, and then it was like this wonderment. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, they do. And they're like the little individual flowers. And I was like, I've known carrots bloom like all my life. So. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying indifferent, but sometimes it's like you're used to
Don't take for granted. I think we take for granted what?
Well, I think I do. I think I take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
I get tired, and maybe sometimes I can't say I get bored of it, but it
just gets routine, mundane. Sometimes farming is not all glamorous. Let's put it that way.
Well, no, it's not at all.
It's not.
It's grunt.
Not at all.
It's grunt work.
It is.
It's in the wrong business.
I know.
Farmers also need to know, like masseuses and chiropractors.
If you're getting into farming to get rich, good luck.
And also but, make really good friends with masseuses.
But if you want to get into farming to
change the world,
change your life.
Change your life. First
you can
of
make.
All.
You yeah. can if with proper planning and years mm-hmm. of experience or proper funding, you can make a living doing it. You can make a decent, a steady. I don't know. You could live off.
Make
of
a
it.
Life.
You can make a life out of it, yeah. And it's a life
a
choice.
Hobby,
it's not.
Hobby.
I mean, it can be a business choice, but it can be a hobby, which is it's a great hobby. And I mean, I still have hobbies in farming, saving mm-hmm. seeds and trying new varieties, but I think changing your life, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. So any...
maybe I have to wrap up a bit.
Yeah, wrap up. But any last words of advice for maybe people who are farming or farming gardening now or want to start? And
if you want to start, just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go out and get... There are a lot of books, which most of them kind of tell you the same thing. A lot of them are written by East Coasters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And there's good advice. Mm-hmm. If you look in the back of a seed packet, I think mostly what you need is kind of there.
Yeah.
And but just go out there and just put seeds in the ground.
See what happens.
You're still farming today, just keep on doing it. Don't mm-hmm. don't give up. I don't know. If you're farming now, you're going to keep on doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you've got massive contracts with the government and Monsanto, then good luck.
We can go on another subject. Like I said, just saw a documentary on Wendell Berry and about the declining of farms and farmers in America, and that's
I think if people like farm and just like keep it close to their community,
mm-hmm.
That's where it's at.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I found the farmers around my community, and mm-hmm. I'm still friends, ten, mm-hmm. however many years later, I forget, and it's cool. It is a cool thing to do,
mm-hmm.
Probably one of the coolest things I've ever done, is farming. It's a pain in the ass, it's hard work, but it's great at the same time.
Is this an endorsement or is this...
It's an endorsement for farming. I'm endorsing farming.
It's hard as heck, but I love it.
It's great. There's nothing wrong with hard work.
Mm.
You know, after a while, it doesn't seem like work anymore. Mm.
If you love what
rewarding.
You do, anything. If you love what you do.
Yeah, and that's anything.
Yeah. If you consider it work, then maybe you should try something else. Mm-hmm. But for me, for you, if you call this and you get paid for it, and you can make a living off of that,
and you can provide yourself and your family and the community with good food,
and you can also mm-hmm. take it anywhere in the world
mm-hmm.
if you need to, you can
skills. You know, you can grow something.
Mm-hmm. You know, you get the packet of seeds,
freedom,
and you can grow something anywhere
mm-hmm.
with any spot, even a container
mm-hmm.
pot, yeah. or a balcony, or whatever.
I don't stockpile bullets; I stockpile seeds.
Very good.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah, they might need that one day.
Yeah, seeds are the future. So. Wow. We'll have to have you back. I think
part two.
Part two.
I could go on forever.
I know. Yeah. That's the thing. There's so much to discuss and so much going on. And
so much history we have.
Mm-hmm.
And stories to share about. We have common mm-hmm. issues with water bugs and drought.
Mm-hmm.
The drought was brutal.
And you have to find the humor in all of it.
Yes.
We do find the humor in a lot of stuff. We have some good times.
Yes.
Yep. Depression.
Commiserate. Because it helps. Because when you say if your zucchini sucks and you find out some dude in the next city his zucchini sucks,
like,
then
all right,
we don't suck.
Yeah, it's somewhat weird.
Well, zucchini kind of sucks in the first place. Whether it's
there's a problem with Justin's got some awesome peppers, and Sergio's like, my peppers don't look that good.
Yeah, there's a little issue going on there.
He's like, wait, my peppers don't look
catching
this good.
It's a different microclimate here, and then 30 minutes away, it's a different climate.
It's a different, on the same property, you move it around.
Well, if it's 100 where I'm at, it's 90 down here.
Yeah.
So,
it's a very good pepper year down here.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Last year was good.
Oh.
Last year was good for peppers. This year just kind of sucks all around. Yeah. But that's farming.
That's farming. That's farming. Till next year, right?
Yeah. Hope springs eternal.
Always next year.
It falls around the corner, so I'm looking forward to greens.
Yeah.
A lot of greens, so that'll be nice.
Yeah. Any pumpkin? Oh, no, not a pumpkin.
And I'll slim up, too. A lot of greens.
Yeah, we won't talk about that. Okay. That's another subject. Exercise, farming, and health. Yeah. All right. So, Sergio, thanks again for coming and sharing your...
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. And we'll have you back. And so that's all the time we have for you today. Until next time, we
keep on growing.
Let's go down to the Urban Homestead, Pasadena by the freeway. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, Jules and his family are working away. Come on down to the farm in the city, back to the future, back to the plan. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, loving the life back into the land.
Oh, ooh, ooh, help the garden grow.
Singing,
oh, ooh, ooh,
we've got to help the garden.
The Urban Homestead theme song was written and recorded by Tom Fair. Thanks, Tom.
We've come to the end of this show.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Be sure to tune in again. Until next time, this is Anais,
Justin,
Jordan. Keep on growing.
Oh, 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 help the garden grow.
Sing it.
Oh, oh, oh,
we've got to help
the garden.
On our website, urbanhomestead.org, also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We love to hear your feedback, and if you'd like to become a podcast patron, go to urbanhomestead.org/podcast.